So my name is Alex Guyard, and I'm 17 years old. Today is Christmas 2017, and I'm speaking with Al Remus, who is my grandfather. We are recording this interview at his home in Phoenix, Arizona. So Grandpa, we're going to start off with some pretty basic questions. So just tell me about your parents. What were your parents like?
Well, my parents were different. To the respect that they're pretty much European. My dad was born in Croatia. My mother was born in Pennsylvania, but went back to Slovenia twice. She came over, went back, and then came over for the last time. And she was, I think, 18. When she came back. And she was sponsored by her aunt and uncle who lived in Indiana, where she worked in their store. They had a little grocery store. So she worked there, and I think she somehow met my dad there.
At the store in
Indiana. At the store in Indiana. And he came over on... your mother has all that, the boat, the picture of the boat... all the people on the boat and the year. And I think the last year that was recorded through Ellis Island was 1932 possibly. And then of course he went to Indiana, went from Ellis Island to Gary, Indiana. Uh-huh. And got a job in a steel mill. He was a blacksmith by trade out of Europe, trained in Europe. And he worked at Sinclair Refinery and a steel mill in Arizona, or in Indiana. He met my mother, of course, and they got married. Her first child was my sister, Mary Ann, and 9 years later, I was born.
Neat.
So, in 1940, I was born. In 45, we came to Arizona. Mm-hmm. And the trek across country was something else. My dad built a trailer and loaded up everything he could load up in that trailer. All his tools, his whatever, for blacksmithing and working with metal. And, that's when Yarnell Hill was just that, a hill. Very dangerous, windy road, narrow, mountainous road. It was paved, but still dangerous. A lot of people, you know, drove off the edges. And so going down that hill, we lost our brakes.
Oh, God.
So he had to use the emergency brake to slow us down. We made it to the bottom, and by that time, we had to get a tire. A tire blew someplace along there. So me and my mother sat in the car or alongside her. This is September of 1945.
And you guys were where? In Arizona already?
In Arizona, yeah. And so me and my mom sat in the car and waited for my sister and my dad to come back with a spare tire, or with a tire, I should say. And everything was rationed. You had to have stamps for food and tokens for tires and, you know, anything that was manufactured because of the wartime, you know, and such as that.
So everything was rationed?
Pretty much. Pretty much everything was rationed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And we moved to Arizona, of course, and we ended up living with my mother's aunt and uncle, who had a secondhand store on 16th Street in Van Buren.
Oh, in Van Buren.
And that was quite a neighborhood. I mean, it was, man, that was the main drag through town. That was the highway, Van Buren. Yeah, so, I mean, they had malt shops, and it was really a neat growing up area. You know, he had every walk of life right there. And we stayed there, I don't know, maybe 8 months.
How old were you when you came to Arizona?
About six.
Oh, so you were still young.
Yeah.
Then that makes your sister what, 15? So she just went to high school.
Yeah.
Here for a little bit. So what were you? Tell me a little bit about like what you and your sister were like growing up. Like what were you guys like as kids? Like what type of stuff did you do? What was your personality?
Well, my sister, I mean, she was old enough to where she didn't really want too much to do with me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I was young enough that I didn't really want too much to do with her. I mean, it was, you know, we got along, but we never really done anything together. My parents weren't the type that would go out of their way to go here or go there. My dad more than my mom. And my dad bought a duplex, moved into there, stayed there for a couple, 3 years, I guess. And then we bought the house on 6th Street in Indian School. And that was basically out of the city limits. The street in front of the folks' house was unpaved. And Indian School Road was just a road with irrigation ditches on each side. And right across the street from 6th Street was the cow pasture for the Phoenix Indian School. They had their own cows, their own dairy.
Indian School being like the school for?
Indians.
For the Indians up until like what age? Like a, was it like
college? 18.
Oh, 18.
Yeah.
It's like high
graduate.
School. Yeah.
And it was quite interesting. I mean, you know, once I found out more about it, it was from all tribes.
Mm.
And they were brought in from different states and whatever. So you had Apaches, Navajos, Pimas, you know, all the Indian tribes. And they were just basically taken away from their parents off the reservations and brought to this school.
Oh, so forced.
To educate them. Yeah, forced education, basically.
Mm.
And after they graduate, they're on their own, but they got to go home every summer.
Mm.
And had to come back every start of the school year. And so that was basically that part. I mean, I had a paper route. We used to deliver papers and through the Indian school.
You said to the Indian school?
Yeah. I mean, that all the teachers pretty much lived there.
Oh, at the school?
At the school, right.
How big was the compound or whatever?
Oh, I don't know. 50 acres, maybe?
Oh, wow, so it was big.
It was big school.
So everybody lived, it was a boarding school, so
yeah. Yeah, they had dorms.
Yeah.
And it was basically tribal warfare, you know, I mean, Indians, so the stuff we're seeing overseas now. Indians are the tribe of Apaches, a tribe of Hopis, a tribe of Navajos,
yeah,
the Pimas, they were all, you know, and of course, they'd all get together.
Mm.
So all the Apaches and all the Navajos and Pimas and whatever, they all got together, and it was just kind of a click. I mean, just like anybody else.
Mm.
You get today's day and age, you got a Mexican click, you got a white, you know, Asian click, and you got...
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it just... and, of course, you always had fights. There's always fights going on, you know. But they had one heck of a football team.
Really?
Oh, man. Those Indians, man, when they played football, they were on the warpath. And no matter what tribe they were, yeah, they were fighting the whites then, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They'd play all the white schools. And
did you play football at your school?
No.
No, you didn't.
But, yeah, it was really interesting. And every Friday night, you couldn't go to sleep till you know, midnight, yelling and hooping and hollering from the football games. They had their own stadium there, and they had their own big swimming pool. And we always used to go over there, and just in the summertime. The kids were gone, but the pool was always kept up.
Hmm.
So we'd go over there and horse around in the pool. And
did you know any of the Indian kids?
No, I went to school with a number of Indian kids at Longview, and to this day, I still run into an Indian guy. I think he was a Navajo, Lauren Puggy.
Lauren Puggy.
Yeah, neat guy.
Yeah.
Really neat guy. And then he had a couple of cousins. One cousin that never took a bath, and we called him Smelly. And I can't remember the other ones. That they pretty much lived in the neighborhood, a couple blocks from us.
Oh yeah.
So they didn't have to go to the Indian school. They went to the same school I went to.
And the whole family lived.
Yeah, lived the whole family. Lived. Oh, okay. Yeah. So they just moved. You know, I think Lauren's dad was a bricklayer.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, he had a trade. He had a trade, and so Lauren, of course, was was educated at our school. And he went to Phoenix Tech for high school, and I think he took agriculture.
He took agriculture, meaning like
an ag class.
It was a class.
Yeah, it was a class.
Because something I was gonna ask you was like at that time. You've made it sound like in the past that like everybody has a trade as opposed to like going to school and getting a major. Like what was that dynamic when you were like in Phoenix, in the sense that like your dad had a trade, you eventually went and got a trade. You're telling me about your buddy that had a trade. Like how common was it to go to college?
It wasn't real common, I don't think. I mean, a lot of people did, but not as many people as the tradespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was basically because of war. You know, it's still, you're looking at the late 40s, early 50s, mm-hmm. and then the late 50s. So education was, you know, I guess, pretty hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
So it was tough for a lot of kids. And yeah. I enjoyed the trades. So.
Yeah. Did you have to pick or decide on your trade when you were in high school? Or how did?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So, at some point in high school, did you choose your trade definitively? And then,
oh no, when I chose my trade before I went into high school.
So in eighth grade, you chose a trade.
Pretty much that's the path I went down. And we're skipping a lot of stuff because I can't just remember all this stuff.
Yeah.
But like in eighth grade and younger, I used to go down to the body and fender shop where my dad worked,
mm-hmm.
and I'd help him out. Well, there's no way. He wanted me to get into trades. You know, he wanted me to have a great education. He wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I was just not cut out for that.
You didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I just was not a book person to where I'd have to sit down and study for hours, you know, and
yeah.
stuff, you know, especially a doctor.
Or a lawyer, even.
Or a lawyer. But he was chosen... by Gray Madison, the guy that owned the Ford dealership, Madison Motors, because my dad was very inventive. I mean, he was really good. Like dual control cars. He was the one that started dual control cars.
Dual control cars. Oh, like for drivers?
For driver's education.
He started that.
He didn't have the steering wheel on the teacher's side,
yeah.
but the teacher had a clutch and a brake.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean... the person driving the car, he could always, you know, stop the car right there if they were getting close to an accident, to stop the car. So, yeah, he put that together, and Gray Madison just loved my dad. And he said, Mike, he says, what you got to do, he says, start putting refrigeration in cars, because that was in 1954, 55, late 54.
Also, air conditioning.
Air conditioning cars, see, and they didn't come from the factory air, so you had to have add-on air. So, I guess you could, and that was pretty expensive. It was more expensive to have it factory put in rather than add on.
Mm-hmm.
So, he asked my dad, he said, well, you gotta do this, because, you know, you're mechanically inclined, man, you could really whip this stuff out. And my dad said, well, I don't know how to make it cold. He says, you just install it and leak check it, and then you take it down to this refrigeration shop, and they'll, you know, put the Freon charge in it and get it working for you. It's okay, great, you know. So I was down there doing that,
mm-hmm.
and that's what got me into air conditioning.
You were down at the refrigeration shop?
I was down at the body shop
with my dad. Putting in
refrigeration units in cars.
Oh, okay.
So we done that that summer, and the guy that we took it to, his name was Buzz. I'll never forget that. Little guy, really, I guess a really good refrigeration man. But he says, you know, he asked me, what are you going to do? And I says, I don't really know what I want to do, you know, yeah. when I get into high school. And he says, why don't you get into refrigeration? He says, man, that's big money in refrigeration. And I says, really? And he says, oh, God, yeah. He's, man, we're making top dollar, $2.50 an hour. Sheesh, boy. Then you get overtime and double time. And he says, God darn, man, we're cleaning house.
What is $2.50 an hour like now?
Let's see. $2.50 an hour is, I think, $2.50 times 40. What is that?
Oh, geez. So that's 5 times 20.
Well, I know $5 an hour is $500.
Oh, so it's $250 an hour is what he's talking.
No, $250 a week.
Oh, so he said $2.50 a week?
Yeah. $2.50 an hour in a 40-hour week, you ended up getting about $250. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So $250 a week, and that's today's money. Or that's back then.
Yeah. Today's money, an hourly rate for a refrigeration man is about $75 an hour.
Oh, wow.
So
that's quite a bit of money.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're any good, you earn your money.
Yeah.
So I decided to do that. So, I told my eighth grade teacher, who was a really neat guy, just a super neat guy, and he says, well, if you really want to do that, and if you're really inclined to be in the trades and do mechanical work and such as that, he says, I'd say yes, do it. So he got me all lined up, and I had to go down and take an aptitude test and a mechanical test and all that stuff to get into trade school. Mm-hmm. I went to Phoenix Tech.
And Phoenix Tech was a trade school?
Yeah, Phoenix Technical School.
Was it just high schoolers?
It was. You had high school and trade school. So you had 4 hours of shop, which was your trade, mm-hmm. and 4 hours of school, mm-hmm.
just normal school.
Math and English and.
Yeah, but only high school, only like high school age kids.
Yeah. Well, no. In the shop, they had veterans. Veterans could take it too. So a vet could come in and, apply and get put into class, but he could do an eight-hour class.
Oh, yeah.
He could be there all day long. Mm-hmm. Well, we had to get, his high school education, and so you got high school education mm-hmm. and your trade.
And the aptitude test did what?
It put me in, in the class where I could, was mechanically inclined to do, refrigeration work. Mm-hmm. So
I'm gonna get back on to the school topic. So did you like school? Did you enjoy going to Phoenix Tech?
Oh yeah, Phoenix Tech was a great school.
It
put out a lot of really good mechanics. I mean, they had refrigeration, sheet metal, electrical, aircraft, body and fender work, carpentry, and for girls they had cosmetology. Go there to be a beautician and a secretary. They had secretary courses, for back then you had typewriters, you didn't have computers. Yeah. And, they had everything you wanted there. Mm. Everything.
Did your sister end up going to Phoenix Tech as well?
She went to St. Mary's High School. And from St. Mary's High School, she went to Phoenix College.
Mm. You have to turn on your...
Yeah, she went to St. Mary's and then went to Phoenix College.
Yeah, what'd she end up doing at Phoenix College?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I mean, that's, what kind of college you call that? It was
community college.
So, I mean, she got her feet wet, and then she got married. I don't know how many years she was into that. She was... Miss Phoenix College. She did.
Miss Phoenix?
Miss Phoenix College.
Oh, she was Miss Phoenix College.
Yes. Just like Miss Arizona or whatever,
Yeah.
But she won that contest. And I can't remember. Maybe her Yeah, I can't remember how old she was. 19, I think, when she got married. 19.
Yeah,
19. Obviously 19. So, of course, she had a couple of kids, and she never went to work. When her husband died, she went back to school. Got a teaching degree, but not a full blown teaching degree, whatever you want to call it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, and she didn't teach here. She moved to California and taught at the penal institution for wayward kids. You know? But at that point, I mean, I was, you know, still high school or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. She have any? You have any stories of her at the penal institute?
Oh, just a bunch of rasty kids, you know.
Really?
Yeah, just, you know, always being how tough they are and
blah,
blah, blah, you know, just
kids
being tough until you get them in a corner and then they all of a sudden, you know, like tighten up. But let's see, other than that, I graduated from Phoenix Tech. When I was at Phoenix Tech, you could take your senior year, you can get a job for your shop class.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you got out of school. You had it arranged so your high school classes were in the morning, your shop classes in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
If you could get a job. Well, I got a job.
With Buzz?
Huh?
Did you work with Buzz?
Oh, no.
Oh.
I worked for an automotive refrigeration shop.
Oh, nice.
Right around the corner from my folks' house.
Oh, that's
so
easy.
I mean, basically, I just zipped on home, walked to work.
Yeah.
And I think I worked there 2 weeks, and I got my uniforms.
Oh, nice.
So I got, you know, didn't have to have my mom wash all my clothes, and got my uniforms, and I was walking home with an armful of uniforms, and one of the guys that worked there, he was, I'd say, about 20, 21 years old.
Yeah.
He said, "Yeah," he says, "give me a ride." He said, "Okay." So I jumped in his car, threw the uniforms on the floor, hopped in, put my leg over the top of the uniforms, and he had a 49 Ford, I think. And the door latches on those cars weren't really that great, you know.
Yeah.
And if the engines are cold, you give it gas. And so he started making the corner to my folks' house. And the car started to die. So he hit the gas. Boom, bam. I flew against the door. Flew out of the car.
Oh, jeez.
And the rear tire ran over me.
Oh, God. And you were just around the corner from your parents' house.
Yeah, so. I should have walked home.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I found out my foot was really broken bad. I shook it, my foot dropped.
It dropped?
Yeah.
90 degree angle.
Yeah. And I don't know.
That's nasty.
I got to get the doctor. So he took me to the doctor.
Has he let him drive you?
Yeah. That we went to as a family doctor's right around the corner.
Oh.
And I straightened up my foot. It didn't drop completely. I mean,
it's crooked.
And I mean, you can see the tire mark across there. Across the side. So I get into the doctor's office, and I sat in a chair, and he came out and looked, and he says, "Oh, God, let me take a look at that." And he goes, you know, and I almost passed out then. And I called my folks and told them that, you know, I got to go to the hospital. I got a broken leg.
Yeah.
So I think my dad came over then. He got picked me up at the the other guy. He took me down to the emergency room at the Good Samaritan Hospital. The guy that ran over me. I got in at that. Then my dad met us down there.
Was he mad?
Yeah, he wasn't exactly happy.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, they got me squared away, and they put a cast on there, and luckily they didn't have to pin anything.
That's always good.
And I hobbled around on crutches for a while.
So what happened to the job?
I lost the job.
He lost.
Couldn't work. I mean, the rest of that summer and back into the school year, I was still on crutches and that, you know. So yeah, and I got out of there, age 18, I think.
19, whatever it was, I got drafted. And when you fill out your draft stuff, you have to put down any broken bones, any, you know, this, any that, you know, what's your medical history. So mm-hmm. I told them I got a broken ankle, you know, just a crushed ankle. So they had a doctor check me out and everything. And all my friends were either getting into service or getting drafted, you know, joining the service or getting drafted. And I thought, man, you know, I never got my paperwork. I mean, everybody's getting their classifications, 4F, 1A, you know, whatever. And so I went down to the military thing and I asked them, I said, you know, what's going on? I said, I got to find out what I'm in. Am I 1A or am I a 4F or a flunky or what? You know, I got to find out. And he says, well, we can't tell you. It'll be in the mail next week. And that came out in the mail next week. I was 4F.
What does that mean?
Not eligible for draft.
Oh, why? So, your foot. But what do all those classifications mean?
Well, I mean, if you're classified as a 1A, and when you're drafted, you go into the Army. Mm. And, you know, you're a foot soldier. Mm. So you're doing a lot of running and climbing and jumping. And they figured I wouldn't be with the trap.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's probably not a bad thing.
And so I guess that was a lucky break.
Yeah. Did you want to go? Did you want to be drafted?
No, hell no.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I was going to join the Air Force. As soon as I got my draft notice, I was going to go down and join the Air Force.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, no way. But, and so, I mean, after that, it was just getting a job for refrigeration shops.
And your dad was too old to be drafted.
Oh, yeah. Time. Yeah.
Yeah. What was your dad like as a... Like, what type of dad was he? Was he a strict dad, or was
strict.
He a
yeah.
strict?
Old country.
Oh, yeah?
Old country strict.
So tell me, do you have any, like, stories about that, or any stories about your dad, or... What about, like, what's the worst trouble you got in with your dad? Or with your mom?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, I guess I broke a window at school by kicking a volleyball through a window. And I got home, and of course the principal called and all that stuff. And I guess they just raised holy hell with me. You know, why did you do blah, blah, blah? And so I was pretty much grounded.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went through the door. I mean, I hit the door and knocked the door clean off the hinges. And my dad was going to kill me.
You knocked which door?
At our house.
The front door?
No, there's like a bedroom door.
Oh.
Kabam! And so I got a lot of crap for that. But that's probably the worst thing that happened.
Yeah, so you're a pretty good kid.
Yeah.
Or you were a good kid.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so now let's transition to your, like, professional life. So you got a job, you're out of Phoenix Tech. And so, and then...
First job I got was with Hobica Refrigeration.
Hobica.
And I worked there for 4 years. And Hobica ended up putting the second refrigeration unit in this house.
Oh, in this house?
Paul was a strange guy. He was... What was his nationality? Syrian, I believe. Syrian, a Cuban Syrian.
Cuban Syrian.
Yeah, his folks moved out of Syria, I guess, to Cuba, and he was born in Cuba. And this is before the Castro regime and all that stuff. But Paul was. When I went to work for him, he had probably only been in the business 5 years on his own business. And
was this his business, Hobica?
Yeah.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was pretty small back then.
Well, it was real small. It was me and him, and then he got a sheet metal man involved, so he had a sheet metal shop, refrigeration shop. And so I learned all kinds of stuff. I learned how to do sheet metal work. I learned how to, you know, and basically you get out of high school, you just get get the fundamentals of refrigeration, then you had to learn the rest on your own, basically.
Yeah.
And what you find in books. And so I worked for him, like I said, maybe 4 years. And I finally went to him. I said, you know, Paul, I gotta have a raise. I think he's paying me $1.50 an hour. And he says, well, he says, if you get married, I'll give you a raise. I said, get married? No. I can't do that. I said, you know, he's staunch Catholic, you know. I mean, just Paul is. That's what Paul believed. You get out of high school, you get a job, you get married, and have 25 kids. You know, it just that's the Catholic way, you know. But anyhow, no, it didn't work. So I ended up quitting and going to work for another, basically a factory rebuild stations for air conditioners. People would pull them out and take them in, and we'd rebuild them, such as that. But after that, I went to work for Merit Air Conditioning, I believe. I worked there for 9 years. I was making decent money, not a lot, but a decent wage. And of course, we were married then.
So when did you meet Grandma?
1962, I believe.
How'd you meet her?
At a bowling alley.
Bowling alley. So what was that like?
Her and the girls were bowling, and us guys were just hanging around looking for chicks, you know? Yeah.
So how'd that go down? Because I know I've seen a decent amount of that. What, like the... What was that one book? It was, like with the greasers and the... Oh, The Outsiders?
The Outsiders.
Anyway, so what was it like when you met Grandma, and how did that relationship go down?
Oh, I don't know. It was one of those things. You start dating, and she found out I was Catholic, and she was Catholic, and before you know it, I was going to church instead of with my folks, or on my own, I'd go to church with her. So, and I think we dated each other for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And you got married, and then you had my mom.
5 years later.
5 years later, after you got married?
Yep. We figured we had to get ourselves stable before we started a family.
Mm-hmm. What was my mom like as a kid?
Fun.
Yeah?
Yeah. Little feisty.
Yeah.
But she was fun. Yep.
Okay, this is something we left out from the beginning of my career. The very exciting thing.
Yeah.
Hobiker Refrigeration, we installed residential air, and remote system right now that we were installing means you run copper pipe through an attic and using a torch to solder the joints. And Paul, the owner, had me go up in the attic with a torch, just a propane torch, not an oxygen acetylene torch. Should have been oxygen acetylene. Anyhow, I went up and had the torch with me and was soldering like crazy, and my foot slipped off a rafter. The torch hit the insulation, and started a little fire. So I put out the torch and started trying to put out the fire with my hands. Well, that spark led to another spark, another spark, another spark, another spark. And all of a sudden, the attic just exploded. Woof!
Holy shit.
Big ball of fire. So all I could think of doing is getting out of there as fast as I could. So I started crawling to the scuttle hole. Whoops, the torch is in the fire. So I crawled back, grabbed the torch, dragging it back across the scuttle hole, or to the scuttle hole. And then the end of the torch got hung up, so I couldn't go any further. But I was starting to choke, and I couldn't breathe.
So I dove for the hole. I dove out, and I don't know how I didn't break my neck, but took the skin off my backbone.
We took the skin off to your backbone.
Yeah, well, I mean, your backbone. You couldn't see the bone, no.
But it went deep to your bone.
It was a good cut.
Oh, God.
Anyhow, by that time, I mean, this was quick. It was right around the corner from the fire department. Firemen were there, and they were punching holes in the ceiling and trying to put out the fire. And I told them, I said, there's an oxygen acetylene torch up in the attic. You got to get to it. It's about 10 feet from the scuttle hole. So they got it. Anyhow, it didn't blow up, and the house wasn't a total disaster, but it was a lot of money to repair it.
This is just a residential house.
And this is a residential house.
And Hoback had to pay out.
His insurance had to pay for it.
Damage.
The funny thing is, 2 weeks later, or maybe 3 weeks later, we're working on another house, a complete remodel, and a big family, and they added on 3 bedrooms on the house, the back end of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd run pipe through the attic already, and there's a pipe coming out, going down the wall. Well, Paul wouldn't let me do that anymore. He was going to do the soldering. So I was inside wiring up the furnace and everything. And I come running out, and I said, Paul, house is on fire. What do you mean? I smell smoke. Something's on fire. And he said, no, it's not on fire. He said, don't worry about it. Well, he looked up, and the freeze plugs on a house, or freeze boards on the house, have little holes in it, you know, with screen in it so birds don't get in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All the smoke start boiling out. I mean,
God. Big
time. And luckily, it was like 10 blocks from the other house that
burned.
So the fire department's right there. Boom. They put that out. So it wasn't a total disaster, but the people had to redo the remodel.
That sucks. How did you guys end up still getting business after these?
I don't know. It wasn't in the paper, so no one knew. If you're not none the wiser, well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Very good. So.
So
that was
back
exciting.
Back
to my mom.
Okay.
So you were telling me about my mom, and you said that she was a pretty decent child.
Pretty decent child. Yeah, she really loved to do. She loved to play the piano, the violin, and swim. I mean, she just and Grandma kept her busy. So early in the morning, they'd go to violin lessons and. And then piano lessons the afternoon, maybe not the same day. And then maybe a couple of years later, the swimming started.
Yeah.
And that was like at 6 a.m. Went over to Glendale Community College, and she had to swim 5 miles.
Oh, God.
And then get out of that and clean up, go to school, and come home, do her studies. And then it was piano. And that was just 2 blocks away. So she got to go to piano lessons. But that kept up for a while until...
Yeah. So how would you say your childhood was different than my mom's?
Us as parenting was a lot different than my folks. My folks didn't get involved in too much of anything that I did. Or my sister.
And how were you, like, involved in my mom's life?
Not so much me, well, other than swim meets and stuff like that. That, you know, I'd time at those.
Mm.
But that, you know, that was about it. But I was involved.
Yeah.
And I took her hunting with me.
Yeah.
You know, and as Tom was pretty teeny then, so I should go hunting with him.
Would you say my mom was a tomboy?
Nope.
She wasn't a tomboy.
No.
She just liked to hunt.
She got a kick out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd take her out and I'd just make her point out, you know, doves and quails and rabbits and anything else she's seen.
Yeah. And my mom was pretty good in school.
Oh, she's really good in school. Yeah.
So she was really smart.
Yeah.
And so I think something I've thought about previously was the whole idea of, so you didn't go to college.
No.
And so she was just smart. So did you ever have a hard time like helping her out with homework or... Or did she ask?
Not me.
You couldn't
help her out. Grandma was the one that could help her out somewhat with that. Yeah.
What was your proudest moment as a father for my mom?
I don't know. There's a bunch of
bunch of stuff. I mean, graduating from high school, graduating from college, you know, that's all big achievements. Well, high school's not really that much of an achievement. It is.
Yeah.
But college, that was a biggie. Yeah.
Okay, so we have 5 minutes. So once my mom went to college, she was gone, and I think you were still working. So what was like your last job? Because I know that you traveled a lot for your last job.
Well, the last job I remember going on was, I mean, all of them were very interesting. I mean, I went to Israel. I got robbed by a rabbi at the Wailing Wall.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. And then in Hungary, as the communist regime fell in Hungary, I was working out of Vienna, and we crossed the border. It was all communist yet, and barbed wire and dogs and machine guns. We crossed the border, done our job, and coming back, we got stopped again. And it was kind of scary because it was, you know, middle of the night, and you see these towers with guys with guns and spotlights and dogs. But we passed. We got through. The next time I went, communist already fell. That was like, it was right on the verge of falling at that point.
Mm.
And the company I was working for said, like, don't worry about it. I need a visa to get into Hungary. They said, don't worry about it. Just get the visa when you cross the border. Well, they put me on the train, crossed the border, stopped 2 or 3 times, and I had to, you know, they come through and check on your passport and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they checked my passport, and they seen I had a Hungarian stamp on there from before,
mm-hmm.
and a visa, but I didn't have a visa this time. And they threw me off the train.
Train going into Hungary?
I was already in Hungary.
Oh, so they didn't let you leave.
Right. I was probably maybe 50 to 100 miles in the country already.
Oh, God.
And I got, it's a train station that you see in the movies. Old rickety wood station with a wooden platform and these old trains that have these two discs like magnets that snap together to pull the cars. Oh, yeah. That's basically what it was. Everybody gets off the train, everybody disappears. And I'm sitting on the platform on my suitcase and toolbox smoking cigarettes, waiting for a train. I want to go back to Vienna. That's where I come out of. I want to go back to Vienna. So everybody that came, trains pull in, and bam. People get on, people get off. I just say,
wait. No way.
It's over.
They just canceled it. It said, your recording suddenly stopped due to an issue with the microphone.
So where do you go back to?
I can't even go back, I don't think. I can't pick up. Upload. Oh, no.
We're not going to do this again.
No, hell no. We're not doing this again. Because that'd just be 45 minutes of you talking over. Yeah, I can just tell my teacher. Okay, so what were you saying about this thing in Vienna?
So at that point, they took my passport. So I had no passport. And I'm stuck in a communist fallen country.
Yeah.
And